At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. And it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode. Our guest this week is Ryan Edwards, who covers the Broncos. Ryan, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Always good to have people who are local and really know the teams. But tell us a little bit about the Broncos, where they stand right now. Let's start with the offseason, maybe, in terms of moves they made to get them to this point.
Well, the biggest one, obviously, was moving on from Russell Wilson. And a lot of moves can be traced from that, including moving on from Justin Simmons and his pretty large salary cap hit. And eventually he signed with the Atlanta Falcons. When you're making a decision like that, especially with a quarterback that you're going to have $85 million in dead cap, it's certainly going to impact everything. Your free agency moves is going to impact your draft. I mean, really kind of down the line. The Broncos had to go kind of bargain bin shopping for a lot of their players, you know, adding guys like Cody Barton and Justin Sternott on one-year contracts, Malcolm Roach, who's playing a prominent role in the defensive line on a one-year contract. I mean, that's what you're going to have to go sort of spot duty with everything. Brandon Jones, who's their starting safety, was kind of their marquee signing. And even he was only a couple year contract with the team. And he's sort of replacing Justin Simmons. And actually, I think the safety room ends up being a little bit better, but we can get into that in a bit. But I mean, in the end, that's what you got to do. And then you've got to hit on your draft picks, right? I mean, the guys not only you drafted last year, but then you're going to hit on the draft picks you had in this draft, including your quarterback, has to be one that can play right away, more or less. They did make a move like a day or before the draft to add Zach Wilson in a trade with the Jets to just sort of bolster the room. Cause I mean, they had Jarrett Stidham here on a 2-year deal. He's on the second year of that contract, but the room by itself wasn't enough, obviously. So you thought, hey, we'll add somebody here that maybe is a bit of an upside swing. Maybe if he, you know, everything clicks, we see that in the NFL from time to time. And then you're going to draft somebody, and they end up staying Pat at number 12 and taking Bo Nix with their first pick. And it's been a steady progression for him. Not every game's been pretty, but he certainly is building on what was his best performance this last week, albeit against the Carolina Panthers. He looked a lot more in command. And yeah, I mean, I said a lot of the moves this offseason really kind of stemmed from that decision and what they were going to do there. They decided to go continuity with the coaching staff. They only player coaches that left were guys that were left over from previous regimes. Everybody else that was hired with Sean Payton, including the coordinators, they all stuck around. They added some more familiar names like Pete Carmichael from the former Saints OC to the coaching staff as more of an advisory role. But yeah, I mean, the Broncos kind of knew that they had a bit of a plan here with Sean Payton over these 2 years. They knew that at some point they were going to move on from Russell Wilson, and everything from there has been built off that move.
Now, Bo Nix was the sixth quarterback taken with the 12th pick, right?
Correct.
It should have worked out for the Ravens. They were obviously hoping for a big run on quarterbacks, and it still didn't leave the left tackles that they really needed available towards the end of the first round. But how did the rest of the draft work out for the Broncos?
Pretty good. I mean, so far, right? I mean, they didn't have a second rounder, which obviously stung a little bit. But then they got Jonah Ellis in the third round, and he's an edge rusher out of Utah. And he's so far been really nice. I mean, he's not a starter because they're already pretty good at the starter position as far as their outside edge rushers. But adding Jonah Ellis out of Utah was a guy that had, I think, 12 and a half sacks in his final year there. He just gets up the field in a hurry. And he's so far sort of hit the ground running. He's already got two sacks for the Broncos to start off his young career. So that's been nice. Audric Estime is a running back they added. You haven't seen a ton of him. He got hurt in the first game. He went on IR. He just came off. He's had a couple of fumbles. I think that they're just bringing him along because the plan all along was Javonte Williams, Jaleel McLaughlin at running back. And then Audric was going to be kind of the third back in the rotation. Certainly a short yardage guy. I mean, he was that at Notre Dame, and he looks pretty good doing that role. But, you know, you just one of those deals you want to kind of see how he does in the NFL. And so far, it's been fumble issues. And so that's – and the Broncos are one of the worst teams in the NFL right now, the 31st in fumbling. They have 7 fumbles in the season. So he's got 2 of them. So that's something that they obviously need to continue to work on. For the rest of the rookie class, I mean, you know, they added Troy Franklin. They traded up in the 4th round to go get him. And he's had, again, mixed results. He had a nice performance against the Saints a couple of weeks ago, but, you know, overall, I think for Troy Franklin, he had a lot of drop issues, in training camp. It's been a bit of an uphill climb for him to get on field snaps. He's been active for the games, for the most part, and he's out there, but he just, again, he had another drop this last week. So that's something that they're just going to continue to work through with him. But the good news for them as far as rookie wide receivers is Devon Vele, who they drafted in the 7th round, has been a bit of a revelation for him, at least through training camp and through the early parts of the season when he's available and healthy. He got a rib injury in the first game. He caught 8 passes versus the Seattle Seahawks in his debut and ended up picking up a rib injury. They sort of brought him along. They didn't put him on IR. They just brought him along slowly, brought him back last couple of weeks. And he's made some key contributions in the receiving game. But overall, I mean, yeah, it's a group that they kind of needed a few of these guys to be able to contribute early. I don't think they need any of these guys to be all pros or pro bowlers or anything like that. They certainly want the quarterback to produce right away since they did name him the starter and a captain. But for the most part, I think that the rookie class is kind of fallen in line for the most, like with what you'd expect.
So we've seen a fair number of lists of recently drafted quarterbacks, the 21 to 23 group, in fact, very poor in terms of what it's produced. And to have, you know, the 24 group already looks pretty terrific in terms of what they're doing off the bat. Drake May is struggling a little bit, but the 1 and 2 with Daniels and Williams are looking really good. And, Penix has not played yet, at least much, right? So,
no. So
Nix is the other guy then that's really doing it. So anyway, and McCarthy has not played either, right?
Right, he's hurt.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us a little bit about Bo Nix in terms of what he brings to the table in terms of strengths and what he presents in terms of weaknesses.
Well, it's fascinating with Bo Nix because a lot of people saw his work at Oregon and knew that he was hyper elite when it came to the short passing yards, and he set an NCAA record and completion percentage. So you knew that he was bringing that to the table. Everybody talked about him as a bit of a human computer. He was great at processing. And I think that's why a lot of people liked the fit with Sean Payton. I mean, I think it's tough when you put the Drew Brees conversation on any young quarterback. But this one was one that even Sean Payton said, I see some characteristics there. The way he processes, the way that he can retain information. You know, they threw a lot at him early on. They still continue to throw a lot at him. And I'd say that some of his struggles at times is that bit of a drinking through a fire hose, right? I mean, you're thinking about it in terms of the rookie curve is always a difficult one, but oftentimes coaching staffs will have different approaches with these rookies. Some of them will say, well, we're going to throw the entire playbook, or we're going to throw as much as we can at this guy because we think he can absorb it. And some of them will say, you know what, we're just going to tailor this thing as close to college as we can to help them out. I'm not saying that's exactly what's happened with Jaden Daniels and Bears quarterback, Caleb Williams. But I'd say, you know, for Bo Nix specifically, they are throwing a lot at him. Their expectations are, you can run our offense. We named you the starter and we think you can do this. We're not going to simplify this for you. And they have him out there spitting out the entire playbook, on the fly when they're doing this thing, when they're putting the play game plan together. So I'd say what you're going to see out of him, I mean, honestly, you're going to see a quarterback that's starting to settle in a bit. We saw that this last week. His much better pocket command, again, it was against the Carolina Panthers. But then the other side of that, you You certainly want to know if he can operate from the pocket consistently, because he's really only had a couple of games of doing that.
So how is his comportment at the line of scrimmage on a pre-snap basis? Does he show evidence of moving other players around or changing the play?
Yes. No, he's actually really good at that. And I'd say that's the thing is, I think he's actually getting better, continually getting better at seeing the field. Early on, he's had some happy feet. And I think that's led to some of his inconsistencies with his passing, certainly some of his downfield throws. But he's done a better job at avoiding some of the turnover worthy plays, if you will. And then he's really great about avoiding sacks. You know, I mean, I know you guys have a quarterback out there that's great about that, generally speaking, too. He doesn't quite have the awareness that Lamar Jackson clearly has, but he is a little more athletic than I think even we expected he would be. He's pretty fast out there. When he gets the ball and he decides to run with it, he's reached over 20 miles per hour on straightaway runs. And again, that's not something that I think a lot of us scouting him at Oregon saw. I mean, we knew he could move, but it's one thing to be able to move, and it's another thing to be able to actually use that as a bit of a weapon. And we've seen that at times as he's sort of learning the game and learning the speed of the game. He's done a really good job avoiding sacks, avoiding negative plays where he can. He's only thrown 5 interceptions on the season, and 4 of them were the first 2 games. So he's really curtailed the turnover worthy plays. He's really avoided sacks. They're one of the best teams in the NFL at avoiding sacks. And like I said, I think he's starting to see the field a little bit better. He's starting to settle in and recognize that what decisions he's going to make with throwing the ball have to start with his feet. And the coaching staff made an interesting comment last week when they were asked about that. They said, we're trying to be careful and to overcoach his feet. And I thought that was an interesting point, because you're coaching him up on so many other things, including right. The playbook, including what he needs to be looking at with his eyes. And I think he's doing a pretty good job of that. But the problem is, it's not always connected to his feet. And so they're sort of taking this in pieces. Like, instead of like, hey, we get into the film session and here's all the things you did wrong, it's like, all right, well, let's start with the things that we can build on and we continue to work. Because make no mistake about it, some people have said that thought this year was really supposed to be a development year for Bo Nix, and it is, but they want to win games, right? This isn't just showing up to the NFL with the expectation of being a bad team and getting a high draft pick next year, because it's all about development. They came in with the anticipation to win games this year, and I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, they're certainly in the playoff hunt, and it's a wide open AFC in terms of what's going on right now. Let's move on. Let's talk about the state of the offensive line. Just take us across left to right, if you would.
Yeah, so you're going to start with Garrett Bowles, who's really the stalwart of the offensive line. He's been the guy that was, one of the few first-round picks besides Pat Surtain that just got an extension. He was like the only one for the longest time. I mean, John Elway's drafts, he just missed on first-round picks left and right. Guys were not getting extended. He's the only guy that really kind of has stood the test of time from the previous regime. In fact, I think he's the only guy left over from that regime. He's in the final year of his contract, so we'll kind of see what they decide to do with there. But he's a pretty solid left tackle. He's not going to be listed as one of the elite guys in the league, but he's a pretty solid left tackle, stays healthy and reliable. And as you know, availability is sometimes the most important thing in the NFL. So that's pretty good. And they brought in a guy you guys are familiar with, Ben Powers. He's our left guard, and this is his second year in the system. And again, I think the continuity has really helped him out. Certainly, he knows what it's like to move forward, right, when you're in run block. You guys do a lot of that out there in Baltimore. But here with Sean Payton, you got to be good in pass pro. So it was an interesting decision between him and our right tackle, Mike McGlinchey, who are both really elite run-blocking offensive linemen. When the Broncos decided to make them a priority add last year in free agency, there was a bit of like, okay, well, we're going to run the ball this year. I mean, that's what we're telling everybody. We're going to run the ball, and Russell Wilson's dropping back just as much as almost anybody. And Bo Nix is one of the top quarterbacks in the league at pass attempts. So you brought in 2 run blocking offensive linemen, and you want to pass the hell out of the ball. So it's a fascinating sort of juxtaposition.
Powers is a guy, of course, a lot of Ravens fans want to hear about. Fantastic pass blocking year. Led to a big contract, I think, in big part, obviously. 4 years, $52 million around that he made. And maybe that's not that big a contract anymore, because the guard market certainly exploded this last offseason. But I'm looking at just the PFF grades, and it looks like his pass blocking has dropped off some. Can you find any reason for that?
Well, yeah, I'd say that he did struggle his first year. Like he got here, and I don't know if some of that was the marrying of Sean Payton and what he wanted to do and Russell Wilson. You know, Russell Wilson holding the ball a lot back there. You'd think with, you know, coming from a system where you had Lamar Jackson, who does some similar things, that wouldn't be such an issue. But he really seemed to struggle early on. I'd say he settled in moments. And then really, you know, this year, I feel like the offensive line has been really, really good. It's been a strength, which is surprising considering you changed centers this year, because Lloyd Cushenberry signed a really lucrative deal out there with the Tennessee Titans. So, and then actually they're on their backup center now, because Luke Wattenberg, who won the job out of camp, is on IR. But yeah, that would be, it's tough to specifically say from, you know, the coaching side of things on why he struggled so much, but I'd say the offense in general struggled. Now this year, you know, you're starting a rookie quarterback back there. Maybe there's some communication stuff that's going on there, but they've had a lot of continuity. Zach Strief, who's the offensive line coach, who obviously worked with Sean Payton out in New Orleans for many years, prominent offensive lineman as well. He's been fantastic. The offensive line love him. They love his coaching style. So I'd say that it's just tough to know. But the one thing they did have last year, they had a lot of continuity. And I know that's a word I keep using, but they had a lot of continuity specifically with not having injuries. They had they had a really healthy offensive line. This year, they've had a couple of guys banged up. McGlinchey was on IR for a little bit. He's back at right tackle. Quinn Miners, I think, is going to be, you know, one of the prominent offensive guards in the league.
Did they extend him yet?
They did. Right before the season, him and Pat Surtain both got extensions, which, again, makes a lot of sense. They're both kind of cornerstone players for this team. And then right now they're starting Alex Forsythe at center, who's a former Oregon center. So there's a little between Bo Nix and Alex Forsythe. They've worked together. And actually, I think the run game has improved substantially with Alex Forsythe. I thought he was going to win the job out of camp, but they ended up going with Wattenberg.
Okay. All right. You talked a little bit about McGlinchey. You can move on to the wide receiver core if you want. Tell us what each brings to the offense.
Well, your top wide receiver is Courtland Sutton. And I guess now that I think about it, he was drafted by John Elway. He was one of the last draft picks. So Courtland Sutton is got a couple years left on his contract. He was kind of a holdout during training camp. I mean, not during training camp, during OTAs. He showed up during mandatory minicamp. They gave him some incentives so that he would be here for training camp. And he seems like he's sort of bought in to the direction of the team. So he's your wide receiver one. And he makes some acrobatic catches. I mean, he's one of those guys that, like, doesn't have the super blazing speed, but he's about a 4.45 guy. And that's probably good enough in this league, especially for his size. And he's going to get pepper with targets. But the one thing that they're showing, and they did this against the Saints, is where they don't have to involve him in every game plan. He didn't get a single target. He didn't register a single target, and they won handily against the Saints. Now it's the Saints, so, you know, take that for what it is. I don't expect that to continue. You saw this last week. He got 11 targets, 8 catches for 100 yards against Carolina. I imagine he'll be a focal point. The other side is interesting because Josh Reynolds was brought in this offseason from Detroit, but he's on IR right now with a broken finger. So there's going to be a little bit of a mixing and matching. I think you're going to see Devon Vele, the rookie, out there. You'll see a bit of Troy Franklin mixed in there. Little Jordan Humphrey is a guy that they brought in from the Saints last year. He's kind of a do-it-all wide receiver, kind of like Tim Patrick was for them for many years. Where he's good in the block, run blocks. He's a guy that has no problem, you know, going over the middle and absorbing big hits if he needs to. He'll fight through tackles. Of course, that cost him last week because he fumbled the ball on the first drive. But it's not a lot of household names. Like I'll say this about the receiving core, you know, everybody probably knows Courtland Sutton, but outside of that, it's a lot of mixing and matching, mostly young receivers. And I think that in their opinion, that they're trying to bring these guys along with Bo Nix.
So going back to Sutton for a second, I'm noticing the passer rating throwing to him is terrible, and there's been 4 interceptions throwing to him already. Is there any common thread running through those?
Well, that was early in the year. Like that's not a recent stat. That's more of an early in the year stat when they were kind of forcing it to him a little bit. And I say that's probably part of it is there was just an intention of, okay, well, this is our wide receiver one. We gotta pepper him with targets. He's our best weapon. And it makes sense. I mean, he really is, you know, he's the most consistent guy in the receiving core. But I think as the offense has sort of evolved and the offense has gotten a little bit more consistency built in and feeling as though they kind of know what they're trying to be a little more, they haven't gone away from Sutton, but they're not forcing it. And I think that's an important sort of distinction between that conversation. But those interceptions were all early in the year. I mean, again, he threw four interceptions through the first two games, and he's only thrown one since. So I'd say a lot of that issue has sort of been changed.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, I interrupted. You were done with the receivers and possibly the tight ends, if you want to move on to them.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the receivers go, I'm just trying to think of who else might sort of, you know, be in the mix. They got Marvin Mims. Now, Marvin Mims is an interesting conversation because he is a Pro Bowl returner. He was a Pro Bowl as a rookie, as a returner. When the Broncos moved on from Jerry Jeudy, another offseason move that was a significant one for them, the expectation and basically the Broncos told us that Marvin Mims was going to be the next guy up. And he really struggled in training camp, had some drops. And he's just seemingly been in the doghouse, which is remarkable because he's one of the fastest guys on the field. You'll see him in some jet sweeps. They'll find some ways to get him the ball, maybe in some space opportunities. He definitely is going to kind of push the ball down the field to stretch out the defense. He'll run some of those deep routes. They haven't really connected on any of them, but that doesn't mean they're not going to try. But yeah, Marvin Mims has been a real fascinating discussion point here in Denver over the last couple of years because you see the explosive nature of what he can do. You know, he had over 100 yards receiving against the Commanders last year, and was the only receiver for the entire season that had over 100 yards receiving, and he did it in one half of football. And then he kind of never saw the field, like, really much at all. And, you know, we reasoned away as well, Jerry Jeudy kind of plays that role. But then you fast forward to this year, and you're like, okay, it should be Marvin Mims out there as the opposite wide receiver of Cortland Sutton, and it just hasn't been the case. Like I said, he'll see the field. He'll be the returner, but he's not a focal point of the offense. So we'll see how that works out.
Got a very high ADOT, which is around 17.1. Yeah. You mentioned there's been some gadget plays as well. If he's taking some jet sweeps and whatnot, is it jet tosses or jet sweeps? Obviously it's jet tosses that can really reduce your ADOT pretty quickly. Wide receiver screens. Does he do any of that?
Yeah, he did. He got one last week, in fact. So yeah, he's, you know, you get him on some screens, you get him on some reverses, some jet sweeps. I mean, you're gonna see all of that. I mean, he's not quite like Zay Flowers, right? But you see, when you watch the Baltimore Ravens, you see Zay Flowers running around on the field, you know, running back and forth and, you know, testing out whether you're in man and zone. And he's going to be kind of that guy. The Broncos don't use a ton of pre-snap, but when they do, that's kind of the guy that ends up being him and Troy Franklin. And they're the two fastest receivers, so it makes sense. Those are the two guys that will get those opportunities. And, you know, I think there's a lot of talent. He showed a lot of talent at Oklahoma. He was the very first draft pick for Sean Payton when he was here. They traded up in the second round to get him. And then he just hasn't really had a major role in the offense. So it would be great to see him at some point break out. We don't really know when that's going to happen, but they'll give him a handful of snaps for sure.
Okay. All right. Tight end.
Yeah, tight ends. This is a fascinating group because if we would have had this conversation last week, I would have said it's the weakest group in the NFL, and that's by every metric you can find. They don't target the tight ends. It's again very anti Baltimore Ravens in a lot of ways because you have weapons all over the place at the tight end room with the Ravens. You get here with the Broncos, and you think with Sean Payton and his history of throwing to tight ends, that would be a bigger function of the offense, but it hasn't been. They brought back Adam Trautman. He's a guy that's on another 1-year contract guy that kind of is their do-it-all tight end. They have Lucas Kroll here, who's a guy they added late last year. I think that they envision a big role for him, but it's still been kind of mixed as far as his availability in offense. But he has a lot of athleticism and can block. So they have guys that probably are capable of being more. They just haven't been a major function of the offense until this last week when Adam Trautman got a touchdown. Nate Atkins, who's a fullback and tight end for him, caught a touchdown. And all of a sudden on National Tight End Day, you have the Broncos deciding to target their tight ends, which was kind of ironic since it was really not a story. And the other tight end, which is the more fascinating conversation, kind of like Marvin Mims, is Greg Dulcich, who was drafted in the third round a couple of years ago out of UCLA. And boy, you're talking about like the prototypical mismatched tight end that has the speed, has the catch radius, has everything you could want. Maybe he's still developing as a blocker, but you'd say, hey, man, as an offensive weapon, I mean, he flashed in his first year as a rookie. He had some big time plays for an offense that ultimately was really, really not very good. And he was one of Nathaniel Hackett's picks, right? Nathaniel Hackett pounded the table for Greg Dulcich. And now he's been a healthy scratch for the last few weeks. So it's like we came into this year. It's like, man, the only thing this guy needs, he needs to be healthy. And if he's healthy, he looks like he prototypes as one of the best tight ends in the league. He's been healthy and he's still not playing. So it's a weird room in a lot of ways. I was excited to see them finally utilizing that room this last week, but there's not a lot of guys that scare you unless they decide to activate Dulcich. But once again, when he's in the game, he's probably not blocking. He's going to be out in route.
He's got 2.8 yards per target this year also, I'm noticing. So that's not very exciting. 28 yards on 10 targets.
Yeah, but he only got to see the field very quickly. He only got to see the field when the offense was really struggling at the beginning of the year, right? So he's been a healthy scratch. Now, could you say, well, they've been made him a healthy scratch in part because now the offense is playing better without him? I mean, I guess you could maybe make a correlation there. But I'd say, in general, you know, when he was on the field early in the season, that was when they were really trying to figure out what the hell they were doing. You know, defenses were teeing off on the, you know, the offensive line was trying to figure out, okay, what's Bo Nix doing? Bo Nix was happy feet. He was only completing short, you know, chunk passes. In the end, I'd say that if he was inserted back into the lineup now, he'd probably find his footing in a better spot. But like, once again, the coaching staff has not deemed that ready.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Who's in the backfield?
Oh, I got Javonte Williams, who's in his fourth year out of North Carolina. And he busted on the scene in his rookie year, had a tremendous first year, tore his ACL in week four of the second year. And then last year, he was still working his way back. So, I mean, he's finally looking mostly like himself. He still has a few games where you're kind of frustrated by the output, frustrated by his vision at times. But he's a wrecking ball when he gets going. He's no Derrick Henry, but you know, he's our version of it. He likes absorbing contact. He likes looking for contact. And I think, you know, we'll see sort of how the season plays out, whether he's got a future with this team or not. I think Audric Estime is probably the guy they drafted with the intention to replace Javonte in those early down runs, but I could see them bringing him back on a couple year contract if he doesn't get a lot of interest outside of Denver. Jaleel McLaughlin is a guy that was a rookie last year, a lot of speed. He's kind of prototypical Darren Sproles kind of guy, but he also will look for more contact than you'd believe with his frame. He is the guy that they'll probably get into flats a lot. There's a guy that they're going to use some with his speed to try to bounce him outside with pitches. So when he's on the field, that's the one telegraph that I hope the Broncos continue to be aware of. I mean, we obviously pointed out to Sean, not that he doesn't know, but it's like every time this dude is on the field, all you got to do is protect outside runs, protect, you know, passes to the flat. And he's, you know, not much of a factor. They don't run him up the middle a ton, but he's one of those guys that has come in. He looked really great in the offseason. He added a little bit of bulk to his body. And, you know, he's continued to be an important part of this offense. I think, again, his speed really kind of helps give a little bit of dimension to the backfield. And then the third running back will be Audric Estime. I just don't know how much he'll be used. He barely was used this last week.
All right. Going back to McLaughlin for a second, because his missed tackle rate is really good. So is it something where he's getting out into space and making that happen as a runner? It's, he's got 16 on only 48 touches or 48 carries this year.
Yeah. He's really great at taking good angles. I mean, you know, that you kind of have to be as a running back, unless you're a monster like Derrick Henry, you kind of have to. I mean, and Derrick does a great job with that too, don't get me wrong, but I'm saying, but Derrick has that just physical ability that's like, okay, well, if you want to try to tackle me, good luck with that. Jaleel doesn't have that availability to him, so he has to make quick moves, and he does get missed tackles. And again, it's different than Javonte Moore is like, okay, well, you guys are going to you're going to try to tackle me. You're going to have to do it with more than just an arm tackle. Jaleel's more of like, okay, I have the footwork, and he's very crafty with that. to be able to absorb, to avoid some of those hits. And what they've done really a really good job of, and he's caught a couple of touchdowns in the flat this year. I think he's got three, in fact, where it's just they put him in an opportunity where he's got one man to beat, and he beats him every time. And so they get inside the 10-yard line. It's a goal-to-go situation. They run him in motion. They do
some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Do some motion. They put him out there in the flat, and he's got to beat one guy, and he wins that matchup every single time because he's really that kind of athlete.
Okay. All right. Well, we're familiar with that sort of athlete here, too. That's good. In terms of personnel groups, they prefer to run out of 21, 12. What's their most common formation or package?
Yeah, I'd say 12 and 20, 21. I mean, you're thinking about, you know, especially their Trautman plays a lot of snaps. And again, assuming Dulcich isn't going to be active for this game, you're going to see some version of Lucas Kroll out there, Nate Atkins. And the thing is with Nate Atkins is he can kind of line up either as an inline guy, or he can shift into the backfield when they're running some eye. And I think that with Nate Atkins, they're not going to throw the ball, and they have Michael Burton as well at fullback. So they have two fullbacks on this roster. So that's why it's a little bit of a mix and match, but I think those guys are going to be on the field, whether they're up on the line or they shift into the backfield and you're running a little offset. And again, this last week, you know, Nate Atkins caught a touchdown and he was in the backfield. And they ended up sort of shifting him out into the flat, and then he caught a touchdown. So I think that they want to give a lot of looks, but they're not really one of those teams that has such elite wide receiver weapons that you need to have those guys on the field at all times. Cortland will play a lot of snaps. Little Jordan Humphrey will be out there, but he's also a good blocker for you. And then they'll shift in those rookies at different points, as well as Marvin Mims. But yeah, I'd say predominantly you're going to see two tight ends, or you're going to see 21 with a fullback in the backfield.
All right. Very good. Any other like common plays or formations they use? Any passing concept they really like to use?
Well, they do run those deep overs. I mean, that's something that you're going to see, you know, and sometimes on that's backside of the play. But I mean, for the most part, you're going to see some front side stuff with slants. They started to work these RPOs in, which has been a really nice revelation for Bo Nix. It seems like he sees things better when there's that option to either tuck and run the ball or hand it off, or maybe hit somebody on a quick slant coming across into his vision. So he seems to process that pretty quick. It seems to get the offense in better formation or better rhythm. We saw that at times against the Saints when they're just doing straight dropbacks. I'm not saying they can't do that, but they just do better when he gets a chance to give multiple looks to the defense. And I think that we'll see a little bit of that against the Ravens, as they're going to have to be very mindful of the fact that the Ravens pass rush is still a very formidable one. Obviously the best run defense in the league. That's going to be fascinating for me because it's a team that does want to run the ball. I know that Sean Payton has visions of the Saints offense with Drew Brees, where you're just, you know, flinging all over the yard. But the fact is, he still has a rookie quarterback back there that needs a little bit of a commitment to the run, especially if you're going to be able to set up some play action opportunities later on. They're starting to do a lot more boots. That's something that we're building in. Yep. We're starting to see a little more of the boot action. And Bo Nix is really good at that. I think you get him on the move and, you know, he has this ability to sort of open things up. They had some nice levels concepts this last week with the tight ends and the running backs. They had a really brilliant one where they did sort of a more shallow version of that with the fullback and two tight ends that worked out nice. So I think you're going to see more of that.
Okay, so let's go back. Those two things, put them together, the boots and the levels. When you say levels, do you mean like usually run off a zone block left, naked boot right, and then running at three levels to get opportunities, with the deep over being one of them, and then some sort of a flyer post or corner?
That's exactly right. Yep, yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly
all
right.
So and Knicks, watching two different quarterbacks run this in Baltimore, Flacco had a lot of success with the boot over the years. And my supposition has always been that the backside edge defender is never really keyed in on a non-mobile quarterback. But Jackson's had much less success with the boot, because at least the boot in the standard way you think of it, with the three levels of opportunity there, because the backside edge defender is laser focused on wherever he's moving, is not going to get fooled very often. And that doesn't mean it can't work. It just, I don't think it works in the traditional way as much here. Where does Knicks fit in on that spectrum in terms of the backside edge defender isn't as focused on him as a, on the entire spectrum of Flacco to Jackson, let's say.
That's quite the spectrum, by the way.
Yes.
To think about, because we had Joe Flacco out here too. So I'm very, very well aware of his mobility. You know, he does a great job. I think that some of those moments in his elusiveness, he's had a few moments where they have gotten him out in the move, and let's say the edge defender stays home and he's not fooled by the motion of the offensive line. Well, then I think that he's been doing a really good job of task of either I'm going to get it out quickly, or I'm going to try to at least avoid those sack opportunities. And, you know, again, he's still a young quarterback. I think there's still a little bit of a belief that you can make a play happen when you probably should just sort of shut it down. But again, you know, they've done a good job of picking and choosing moments to do that. And I think down and distance is always a bit of a tell on what they're thinking in those examples and giving him those opportunities. And like I said, the sequencing, I think in general, with the offensive coordinator, whether you want to say that Joe Lombardi or in this case, Sean Payton, who's actually calling the plays, the sequencing has been so much better for this offense over the last few weeks, because they seem to sort of kind of realize, okay, well, he has the ability to run. We don't necessarily have to design that, but we can at least let people know that he can do that. And when you build that into the offense, much like it is out in Baltimore, and again, it's not to that level, but when you build that in, defense have to play honest. They might have to keep a spy in. They might have to, you know, they have to think about things turned. They can't just come straight up field at you, because he's broken several tackles in the backfield and taken off and run for a lot of yards this year. I mean, he had, I think it's 75 yards versus the Saints. And some of that was design. I mean, he had like a 33 yarder in there, but then quite a few of those were just him making a play. And it's one of those deals, like he'll make a couple of reads, and if it's not there, he's going to take off. But they've been doing such a good job of giving him looks that are easily palatable. And what I've really enjoyed about at least the last 2 weeks, especially on some of those levels concepts, is that he's not just taking the short guy who looks open. And oftentimes you'll see that with defenses where they just assume you're going to go short, especially when you're Bo Nix, and that's what we've seen on tape. But he's been taking the intermediate and even sometimes deeper shots down the field, because some of those are coming open, because the defenses are playing up to the flats, because they should, as they should. I mean, this is what's on tape. So they're playing up to the short route, they're baiting him into the short route, which will end up being a 2 or 3 yard gain. And he's been taking that, thinking, hey, a positive game is a positive game. But the reality is they're now pushing him to do more. And so that's something that has been a nice facet to this offense.
All right. Very cool. Very detailed description of the offense. Let's flip it over to the defensive side. I always like to start off with, what's their most common pass defense look in more obvious passing downs? Are they a committed nickel? Do they move to a dime? What do they do?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way they view their defense, I mean, Vance Joseph obviously is going to blitz like crazy, and he's got a lot of – he likes to blitz those DBs, right? So he'll have guys like Jaquan McMillan on the field, who's their nickel, and he'll pre-play, I don't know, 75-80% of the snaps. So if you want to say that's their base, that's probably about right, you know, with Jaquan McMillan as the nickel. Their two cornerbacks, Pastor Tanner Riley Moss, are playing at an unbelievable level so far this year. But whatever metric you want to look at, they've been really good. Brandon Jones, their safety. We'll see if PJ Locke, he was out this last week with a thumb injury. We'll see if he can play. Devon Keyes, the other safety that will play prominently at safety. But yeah, I'd say mostly they're going to be a nickel You'll see some dime looks, but you know that they're really blitz heavy. They like to be able, I mean, they're second in the league right now in blitz rate at 36.5. So I'd say that it just, he likes to mix it up. I think the one thing that Vance Joseph knows is he's got a very talented secondary that can play man. And if your secondary can man up against most teams' receivers, and they believe that, then that gives you some opportunities with your defensive line and your edge rushers to really get after the quarterback. And so they find unique ways to either blitz the inside linebacker, Justin Sternad, who's more of a special teams guy, has been coming on a lot of blitzes, and he just has this knack for finding these creases and getting upfield in a hurry. That mixed with Cody Barton, who's kind of their every down inside linebacker, who had a real big game against the Saints, but it's just sort of a steadying force out there. They're just fine. They find different ways to bring guys in sort of unique ways. But to answer your question, long-winded, their base is probably nickel.
Okay, so Barton is the green dot wearer, or is that a safety?
Yes, it's Barton.
Okay. Let's start at the defensive line then, and take us across in terms of who's playing well.
Yeah, I mean, their defensive line last year was very clearly a weakness, and they knew that, and they knew going into this offseason, even shopping in the bargain bin, they were going to have to improve it. So they traded for John Franklin Myers for the Jets, and he's been fantastic. Maybe not so much in the box score stats, but setting up guys like Zach Allen, he's been wonderful for the defensive line. Zach Allen's in his second year. He was with Arizona a couple of years ago with Vance Joseph. He's had remarkable year. He's leading the NFL as defensive tackle in pressures, which is not something I would have had on my bingo card coming into the year.
Yeah, there you go.
I think he's a good player. Like I've always thought he's a good player. I just think he was that player. I don't think the rest of the league thought he'd be that player, or else he would have obviously earned a lot more money on the open market and free agency. In fact, a lot of Broncos fans thought they should have kept Draymond Jones, who ended up going to Seattle, but they decided to go with Zach Allen, and he's been better to this point. So John Franklin Myers, Zach Allen, DJ Jones, a guy they acquired in free agency a few years ago from the 49ers. He's been just as steady as they come. And then they added Malcolm Roach this offseason from the New Orleans Saints on a one-year contract. And that group has been really good. I mean, they're obviously better against the run than they were last year. They were the worst run defense, so I guess nowhere to go but up. They've been better against the run. They've had a couple of tough games earlier in the year, especially like the first game against the Seahawks. Kenneth Walker and Geno Smith both had kind of their way with them. I think that kind of hurt their early stats. But they certainly improved over the last several weeks, and now I view them as a bit of a strength. So defensive line, their edge rush group is really young, but they're really tenacious. Nick Benito's on a 6-game streak of getting a sack, which is tied a franchise record. It's remarkable to see that. You've got Baron Browning, a little bit more of a part-time role. I think he might be on the trade block. We'll see I assume he'll play this game because he's healthy, but that's a guy that's kind of being rumored in possible trades. The other edge position, I talked about Jonah Ellis earlier, who's going to get some opportunities, and Jonathan Cooper is a rock solid, going to get you 5, 6, 7 sacks every single season, and I think they're going to extend him at some point.
So go back to Zach Allen for a second, because, okay, does he line up more on the edge as uncovered player, or, you know, a 5? Where does he line up most of the time?
Yeah, he'll be in there between a 3 and a 5. I mean, I think that, you know, ideally for them, they look at Roach, they look at DJ Jones as kind of their interior nose guys, and then they get a chance with JFM as well as Zach Allen to be more 5 techs. And so that's kind of, and then you go wide with the other two, with the edge rushers. And then you kind of mix and match from there.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Take us off ball. Who's playing there?
Yeah. So like I said, Cody Barton, he's going to be, you know, Alex Singleton was their starter. He tore his ACL, actually finished the game against Tampa Bay, hurt it, I think in the second quarter or first quarter, played the rest of the game on a torn ACL, which is just bananas. But he tore his ACL, but they really haven't skipped a beat. It's kind of remarkable. You sort of think that, you know, losing a starting inside linebacker for a lot of defenses would be significant. But Cody Barton has taken on the reins as being the green dot guy. Justin Cernod is the other guy that kind of plays a lot of snaps. They had aspirations of Drew Sanders, who's a third round pick for them a couple of years ago. But he ended up injuring his Achilles in the offseason, so he hasn't really been a factor. Yeah, maybe later this year he will be. But for the most part, for your off-the-ball linebackers, those are your two guys.
So one thing I noticed going through the team here, and this is something that shows up, I look for it every week because the Ravens are a pretty good missed tackle forced team, is that the Broncos have had some identifiable problems putting people on the ground this year. Talk a little bit about that, or if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong.
No, I mean, you there's definitely been a couple of games this year. I'd say, again, sort of early on, that was a bit of a problem for sure. And if, you know, if they end up losing this game, which, you know, again, there's a multitude of reasons why they could, because of how talented that Ravens offense is. That would probably be one of the reasons. You got to be able to not only stay with these receivers and obviously what Derrick Henry does to every NFL defense, but you've got to be able to get these guys on the ground quickly. And yeah, I'd say there's a little bit of that. That isn't a big talking topic here in Denver so much about like as a worry for this defense. I think because they do so many other things well, and they don't get beat a lot. I mean, when they do have their games. I mean, obviously last year everybody remembers the Miami Dolphins game, but they sort of have tried to put that as far away in the rearview mirror as possible. And for the most part, I think that they have by most metrics, they put themselves in position. But yeah, they've had a couple of tough games with missed tackles. I think some of the tough thing discussion point about this defense right now is some of the talent they've been playing against, right? Because they have the Raiders, they've got the Panthers, they got the Saints, and these are all, you know, subpar offenses. So I think a lot of people here are like, okay, well, it's one thing to beat up on bad teams that are regarded as bad teams in the NFL. It's another thing to face some of the elite offenses. Now, they were very good against Tampa Bay. Defensively, especially, right? Offense, they did a good job, but the defense was locked down on Tampa Bay. They were okay against, I'm trying to think early on. I mean, the Steelers game was kind of a tough game, I think, for the defense at points. The Chargers game especially was really tough for the defense. That's probably the game where a lot of those missed tackles came up, because I remember them having a lot of broken tackles against the LA Chargers a few weeks ago. So this would be an interesting test, because a lot of people are wondering really about the overall talent of this defense right now, because they've been sort of feasting on some of these bad offenses.
All right, take us through the secondary. You mentioned you talked about both corners very briefly earlier, but take us through the four there, or five.
Yeah, I mean, you got an All-Pro there, Pat Surtain. A lot of people were wondering, and he got an extension, justifiably. He's one of the best young corners in the NFL, and he's got three interceptions on the season. He continues to be just a monster back there. Very, very special, as you guys know. I mean, it'll be fascinating. They've had him shadowing once this year.
So he's traveling.
He's traveling a lot more. Yeah. I don't know if he'll travel the whole game. Say if it's, for argument's sake, Zay Flowers is the number one. I don't know if he'll travel with him as much as Zay runs around, but I'm fascinated to watch that matchup specifically. But the thing that everybody wondered is who's going to start opposite him. Damari Mathis was sort of the ticketed guy to be in that conversation. They brought in Levi Wallace, who you guys are familiar with play with the Steelers.
Yep.
So we thought there'd be a little bit of competition, but Riley Moss, the Broncos traded up into the third round last year to draft him out of Iowa. And he's a white cornerback, and people have all the jokes that they want to have about a white cornerback playing in the NFL. And honestly, when people heard that that was going to be the starting cornerback, people didn't believe it. Like, how could the Broncos do this to themselves? They're putting themselves in such a bad situation. You just know for a fact that it's going to be all the targets are going to go to him. But he has been an unbelievable player for the Broncos. He has been so good. And even the receptions he gives up, they're not often being beat. He doesn't get beat often. He's in phase. He's attached. There's not really one of those like didn't know what was coming or looks like he doesn't belong out there. And the coaching staff just raved about him all offseason about his instincts, his speed, and his speed is good. I mean, it's very impressive. So honestly, you know, we're 8 weeks into the season. If you'd have told me that a very clear strength of this team would be the secondary before the season started, I probably would have been like, well, I mean, there's Surtain, but I don't know. I mean, and Jaquan McMillan had some flashes last year, but if you can't figure out your other cornerback and you got all these changes of safety, I just don't believe you. But now I look at it here and I'm saying, oh, they feel good that they can lock down dang near anybody. Again, speed will be an interesting thing to test this group out. Historically, the Ravens have had such a good job. They've done a good job at beating them. I remember when the Ravens were in town a few years ago, and Hollywood Brown got a deep completion on them, and I mean, they just had a really hard time handling the speed of the Ravens at that time. So that'll be an interesting matchup. But you know, the cornerbacks, they feel really good about their group. They really do. And then the safeties, of course, like I said, Brandon Jones has allowed them to be a little more multiple than they were with Justin Simmons. You know, Justin Simmons, very talented safety, certainly a free safety. But with Jones, they can move him up in the box. They can play him back. I mean, he just gives them so many other looks that they can do. And then PJ Locke, they already have such a nice sort of group there. And then it seems like the one thing I'll give the defense credit for, and I'll give the front office credit for, is, you know, they'll have an injury here and there. They'll pick up an injury, but then they'll bring somebody in, and they just slot right in. You know, they lost Alex Singleton for the year, and boy, you're thinking, great. You know, the guy, the green dot guy, this is, you know, mm-hmm. he's your leading tackler, had over 100 tackles last several years. You know, you just, great. How are you gonna recreate that productivity? And they slot these guys in, and in some ways they get better. It's kind of remarkable. But even Devin Key last week, again, it was the Carolina Panthers. Didn't seem like he was out of position ever in there. So they've done a really good job with the front office finding guys to fill the roles when they need them.
Okay. All right. Now, you jogged my memory a little bit with the discussion of the long pass to Hollywood Brown. But that game, I believe, is the same one where the Broncos threw an interception with 3 seconds remaining, gave the ball back to the Ravens, and the Ravens were just short of a 100-yard rushing game. Yep. And it's the same game. And so they ran the ball. And Fangio was very upset about it after the game. Yes, we now refer to that here as the Fangio line, by the way, the getting 100 yards rushing in a game. But does that carry over at all to any of the players who might have been around at that time, or any of the coaching staff maybe who remembers that event?
No. I mean, again, there's only a couple guys that were, I mean, Cortland Sutton and Garrett Bowles are probably the only guys that were here for that. The Fangio era, I don't think there are really any other guys otherwise that have made it through there. And I was there for that press conference with Vic, and he very, very much knew what he was about to say when he got up there and went off about John Harbaugh trying to.
That makes it worse, not better, by the way.
No, I know. Hey, listen, man, we all kind of said, we also had a similar feeling about it. We're like, all right, man, I mean, it's the NFL, you know, if you don't like it, stop it. You know, it's kind of like this last week with Carolina. They got grumpy at Sean Payton for running trick plays and whatever. And I'm like, man, I remember years of the New England Patriots running it up on everybody. And yep. It's pro football. I mean, it's just what it is. You know, like, hey, there was still a lot of time left in the game. Do you want them kicking long field goals at that point? It's like, no, you just – the game is more or less over. We're running some plays out here, some stuff we worked on all week. If you don't like it, stop it. And that was kind of what I said at the time when Vic said that. I'm like, hey man, you knew what they wanted to do. They had this streak going. If you don't like it, stop it. Like, they weren't going to just kneel on the ball just because you want them to. That doesn't make any sense.
The other thing that I wanted to ask is, you know, this has been a Ravens run game, which has caused some very strange things to happen with opponents. And I'll go back to the Tampa Bay game, which is just, you know, Monday a week ago. They had 4.15 defensive backs per play, which basically means they're playing the base defense every single play, even on third and long some to try and stop the run. Never seen anything like it, by the way. Yeah. Not in recent years. I guess I'm wondering, how do you expect the Broncos to line up about that? Are we going to see a lot of three down linemen with two outside linebackers? Are we going to see extra men on the line? What do you expect?
Yeah, I'm really fascinated. I've been watching some of the Ravens games last couple of days, you know, preparing for the show, preparing for the free game and everything like mm-hmm. that. And, you know, when you have an offense that rushes for 200 yards or averaging 200 yards a game, I mean, it's silly. I mean, that's such a dominant performance. The Ravens are historic for it, right? I mean, you know what they're going to try to do. I know that historically, for a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, there's been more of a mush rush. They're trying to contain and make sure he can't escape. But, you know, it seemed like, and at least watching the Browns this last week, they just kind of went after him. And they sort of try to shorten the clock of his ability to read the field. And that's a little bit of credit to him as a passer. And I think deservedly, he's obviously elite at that. But early on in his career, it was much more worry about his legs. Now you have to worry about both. but I'll be interested to see specifically how they do that. But considering, like I said, they're second in the NFL, 36.5% blitz rate in the NFL. I think Vance Joseph is going to try to do what the Browns did this last week, is really kind of shorten his clock and try to get him to have to process really, really quick. And they bring the blitzes from all over the place. He's really smart at some of the ways he disguises. He's not afraid, like a lot of the defensive coordinators that are kind of in their bag, to drop defensive linemen into coverage if they have to, just to confuse an offensive line about where the blitz is coming from. So I think Lamar's going to get a lot of different looks, and I'm fascinated to see how it looks for him.
All right. Very good. Outstanding stuff, Ryan. I don't ask for score predictions on the show, but what I do like to do is ask the guest, give me one player on each side of the ball who you think matches up particularly well against the Ravens.
That's a good question. Let's see. On the offensive side of the ball for the Broncos, you know, again, the Ravens' pass defense has been the biggest suspect, right? Their secondary. So you'd kind of have to go a receiver. I'd really like to see Cortland Sutton kind of continue to build on what he's doing, but I think he's going to get a lot of attention this week. So I'm going to kind of go the other side. I think Devon Vele, again, sort of off the board conversation point here. I think Devon Vele is going to be a pretty heavy influence guy this week. Again, that's one of the things the Broncos are building, is that they say, well, hey, if you're going to really spend all your efforts taking away our major weapon, which is understandable, then we need some other guys to step up into a role. And every week it's a different guy. So I could quite literally just list all of it. Hey, maybe it's a Marvin Mims game. Marvin Mims is going to go off for 100 yards, and that wouldn't shock me, because that's what this offense is. Or maybe it's like last week, all of a sudden the tight ends are going to be the big story of the offense. So to be honest, your guess is as good as mine, but I'll throw a dart at the board and say Devon Vele. On the defensive side of the ball, I think Riley Moss is going to be that. Okay. That's going to be the guy I'm really fascinated to see. Everybody knows what Pat Surtain is. I'm going to see if he's going to be on Aguilar, if he, you know, what matchup they're going to try to do, if they're going to put him on one of the tight ends. That's going to be fascinating.
What was going to ask that about Surtain is that, you know, you mentioned he'd been traveling, and sometimes that means you travel to the two or instead of, and Bateman is having a terrific year. He's at 12.1 yards per target. He's certainly a dangerous receiver. I was wondering if that seems to be, to me, for what I think of Surtain's skill set being, Bateman be more effective against him, because I don't think anybody is really effective in man coverage against Flowers. He's too sudden.
Yeah.
Bateman's a route runner, and Surtain is the guy who probably will not fall for the crappy pulls at the top of the stem, as opposed to some other corners might.
No, I think that's a great point, and especially his length, because Bateman's got a lot of length. I think that would make a lot of sense to have Surtain working on him. And like you said, I mean, the way that Zay Flowers, they put him in motion, he is very sudden. You know, one of the things that I've really admired about the Ravens is the way they kind of mix it up with having you go side to side and then coming downhill at you with Henry. There's just so many ways you kind of have to guard against it. And oh, by the way, at any moment, Lamar Jackson will keep it and run it for 50 yards. I mean, that can happen at any time. So it'll be fascinating to see how the Ravens, knowing that the Broncos do want to get up field at them, if they're going to try to get them to go side to side early, like the Browns last game last week, where the Ravens had them going side to side. It'll be interesting to they try to do the same thing with the Broncos early on.
All right. Outstanding stuff, Ryan. Very, very well done. Tell folks where they can find your work or contact you online if they want to talk football.
I appreciate it. Yeah. R. Edwards Radio on Twitter is a good place to find me. I do Afternoon Drive on the flagship for the Broncos on KOA with Voice of the Broncos, Dave Logan, and Alfred Williams, two-time champion. And then I do the pre and post game for the Broncos Radio Network. So you'll hear me on the pregame for KOA, and you'll hear me on the postgame doing the React show all the way until the wee hours of the morning.
All right. Outstanding stuff, Ryan. Really appreciate having you on. Other folks out there, If you want to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I want to hear your ideas. And otherwise, always appreciate your loyalty. Ryan, thanks again for coming on.
Anytime.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans.
$829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.